Good evening, everyone. When I got a call from Rav Dov Milstein, that he asked me to speak here tonight, so I had no idea that such a night, so everyone was coming together on Monday night. It's a beautiful thing. Very impressed. I should come more often. Nice drinks, nice people. Baruch Hashem. Very nice. It should only be successful. I asked him a few hours ago. I called him up and I asked him if there would be a minion for Maris. So he said, there should be. So I said, I don't like the sound of that. So he said, no, there should be. He said, no, you said that already. Yeah. Will there be? Yeah, there should be. I said, how about parking? Should be. So far, two for two, I found a spot. There was Marv. So if you'll get anything from tonight, should be. Should be you'll get something from tonight. Should be. We'll see if we're three for three. There's a fellow who was looking for work. He was an Orthodox rabbi looking for work. And he heard about this place, the Reform Temple. So he said, maybe I'll get some job over there. So they said, well, you have to come for a tryout. He said, okay, no problem. So they say they made up a date. They have a place, a time for him to come. There's a tryout, a speech. Speech for before the congregation. So a few weeks before the speech, he calls up the president and he tells the president of the synagogue, he says, you know, I want to tell you what I'm going to talk about. He says, very good. What is it? What do you want to talk about? So he says, I think I want to talk about Shabbos. So he says, Shabbos. He says, well, it's not such a good idea. He said, why not? So well, a lot of people here, they don't exactly keep the Shabbos. Maybe don't speak about that. Think of something else. All right, a week later, he comes up, calls him up. He says, okay, I'm going to speak about tzedakah, you know. Oh, tzedakah, you mean charity. Oh, very nice. You know, it's not such a good idea. You know? A lot of people are a little stingy here. Maybe don't speak about tzedakah, you know. All right. Think of something else. A week later, he calls him up. I want to speak about prayer. A prayer in the synagogue. You know, no, it's not a good idea. A lot of people, they come, they don't really pray. He says, well, you know, well, what do you want me to do? I mean, Shabbos, tzedakah, prayer, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to speak about? So the president says, what do you mean? Judaism. So what is Judaism? So I stand here tonight, and they tell me, they want me to speak about parenting. Parenting. It's quite a big topic, parenting. It involves a lot of different things. I assume many of you, or most of you, are parents. And that's why you're here tonight, because you think you're going to walk away with a little wisdom from the old man. I think as I learned from some mistakes from my eight children, Kanainahara, they taught me a lot. They taught me a lot of mistakes. So tonight you're going to hear about the mistakes that I made, and you will benefit, you should benefit, from the mistakes that I made. The truth is that parenting, chinuch in general, used to be very easy, but today, I like to say, I think it's true that everybody here, everybody I meet, including myself, we parent out of fear. We are fearful people. The inmates are running the asylum, as they say. And we are basically helpless. We stay up at night worrying about them, every one of them, or we should. If you don't, you should start. And it's a very scary proposition. It's a very fearful thing. And every year it gets more and more fearful, and I look at my kids who have kids and I say, thank God that I'm not bringing up those kids now. You know, I had enough trouble bringing up my own, and it's much, much harder today. Rabbi Elias, the famous Mechanech, Rabbi Elias from Washington Heights, he said that when he first started out as a Rebbe in fourth grade, I think it was fourth grade, must have been in the 1940s, 50s, in Breuer's, he said he was walking through the halls one day. He was a new Rebbe. And he was all invigorated, excited. Be a Rebbe. I'll change the world, you know. And he meets some of the old guard, the people who were already seasoned Rebbeim there at that time. And they look at him, and he's walking down the hall, and he had a particularly difficult day. And he had a drawn face. And one of the Rebbeim stopped him in the hall and says, Rabbi Elias, was ist? What's wrong? What's the problem? So he starts telling him, yes, this bucher and that boy and this, and I said, yeah. He said, fellow told him, he says, Rabbi Elias, ich verstehe nicht, I don't understand, he said. Mit den guten lernt man, und mit den schlechten patscht man. Das ist es. That's chinuch. With the good ones you learn, with the bad ones you smack them. Done, finished. Today you get arrested. You know? Used to be very simple. I think that parenting used to be pretty simple too. Pretty much. I don't know about when you were growing up. When I was growing up, pretty simple. You know, we had a shtick when I was growing up. Not a shtick. Very simple, you know. You had like a chook. Yeah, you know, I used to have a chook. And so you wanted to show it off. So you wore your black hat in the back. You know, we used to wear it like this. You know, like this. Like, you know, like it was like falling. You could hardly walk. You know, like, that's how we used to walk. We wore the hat, but you had to walk like that, you know. Because you don't want to mess up the chook, you know. It was very important. So today, you know, today I have other things. You know, so today, like, the big thing is wear a big yarmulke. So if you wanted to be like a cool guy in my days, well, little yarmulke. Today you want to be cool, you wear a big yarmulke. You understand, right? Makes no sense whatsoever, right? And where you wear it, over there or over there, or a little bit, some kids wear it over there like that, you know, and they're cool, right? So everything is upside down. You have no idea what they're doing. The kids don't have any idea what they're doing either. That hasn't changed much. So it's a very difficult job that we have today. But of course, you have to be nice to your kids. You have to parent out of fear, because they will choose your nursing home, as the bumper sticker says. So you better be nice to them. So you want to be nice to them, but at the same time, you want them to grow up correctly. But of course, kids today, and to me, if you ask me what the single biggest problem today is in raising children, it's very simple, and that is kids basically get whatever they want. And that is the number one problem. They get whatever they want. They really struggle for nothing. Whatever they, what do you want? Just be quiet. I'll give you whatever you want. Just be quiet. That's it. And they get whatever they want. You walk into Kosher Delight. You ever see kids order in Kosher Delight? It's hysterical. It's hysterical. You know? I want a Burger Delight. Burger Delight. And then they're waiting for the instructions, because it has to be custom made, you know. Well done, not too well done, you know. Yeah. Pickles on the side, mayo, lettuce, a little tomato, not too much tomato, a little mayo. Right. Put it on a sesame seed bun. You know, how many sesame seeds do you want on that bun? Toasted, a little bit, a little toasted. You'll get the bun, a little toasted, a little sesame seeds with the burger, not done, half done, pickles, mayo. Got a guy, and he has a button for every little thing you ask for. I mean, I never saw the other side. You ever see the other side of the counter? I have to go there once. They seem to have another button for every. Oh, how many sesame seeds do you want? And he's putting it in there. It's unbelievable. And the kids say, and hurry it up, please. I'm double parked. And you know what? He gets it. Everything you want. How many different kind of drinks did you bring in here tonight? Look at this. This is sick. It's an orange carrot diet Snapple. Yeah. You know? I don't like too much carrot in here. You know, a little more orange. This is what we're dealing with today. And kids are used to getting, and we are too, of course. But the kids especially are used to getting whatever it is that they want. So there's no struggle anymore. Somebody said there's only two struggles left in the world: childbirth and waiting on line at the Motor Vehicle Bureau. And by the way, both of them are things you don't have to do yourself anymore. Think about it. So they're very hard to figure out. I'm going to have some orange carrots. So I want to make really 2 points to you about parenting tonight. Besides the fact that kids are getting whatever they want, there's not much you can do about that, by the way. We can talk about it some other future time, but I want to make basically 2 points, and they're not points that you've never heard before. They really basically are reminders, but we all need reminders, because it's very hard once you get into a pattern of doing anything, and especially of parenting, to switch gears. It's very difficult to switch. You're used to doing something. So even though it says, and each one of your children should be parented differently, but you don't really do that. you don't really think about it that much. You're on automatic. You're on the default system. You're the factory setting. That's how you are, and that's how you give it out. So it's very hard to change. One of my favorite stories you may have heard me tell is about this psychiatrist who I knew on his first day of the job. It was a psychiatrist who told me his very first day he did rounds in the mental department of a hospital. And on the ward, he went on rounds. They took him the first day, he introduced him to some of the patients. So he walks around, he comes into a room, and he meets the people. He goes into a certain room there, and introduces him to a patient. He says, "Dr. O'Connor, this is Mr. Peterson." He says, "Oh, hello, how do you do, sir?" So they tell him, says, "Dr. O'Connor, Mr. Peterson is here on the ward because he thinks he's a zombie." He says, "Oh, okay." So Dr. O'Connor was telling me the story. He says, so I turned to Peterson, and I said to the man, I said, "Tell me, sir, what makes you think you're a zombie?" So I said, "Well, it's quite obvious that I'm a zombie," he said, "because zombies do not bleed." I said, "Really?" I'm thinking to myself, he said, this is the easiest job in the world. I'm going to cure this guy on the first day in the hospital. He runs to the nurse's station, he gets a little needle, comes back to the room, takes out Peterson's hand, pokes the finger, and starts blood starts coming out. So he shows his Mr. Peterson, "Mr. Peterson, what do you think now?" He says, "Oh, look at that, I was wrong," he said. "Zombies do bleed." Look at that. Yeah. It's funny. The problem is that we're the zombies, folks. We're the zombies. No matter what we're shown, if we think we're a zombie, that's the way it is. We stay that way. People try to point things out to us. Maybe try it this way. Nah. I got it. You know, I'm doing it. Maybe try it a different way. No. You know, parenting, whatever it may be. You try to switch gears, convince you that you can do something a little bit differently. Not so simple. We like to be set in our ways, and we know best. Of course, if we asked you, said you're always right. Oh no, I'm the first one to admit that I'm right. Yeah, right, first one, right. But when it comes to parenting, you can't afford to have that attitude. You have to be able to at least consider other things. And the first thing of the 2 points that I want to tell you is pretty basic, and that is that we have really forgotten how to listen to our children. We have basically forgotten how to listen at all, and certainly to our children. You know, there's a big controversy going on. It's going on for many years. It'll continue for many years. ADD. Everybody heard about ADD. Attention deficit disorder. Are we over-medicating our children? Are we under-medicating our children? What are we doing about it? Not enough. Kids can't sit still. Rebbe just came over to me a few minutes ago. Said, as a kid in this class, can't sit still. Attention deficit disorder. What should we do about it? It's a problem. What should we do about it? I have some news for you here. I believe that we all have ADD. Everybody. And it is a sign of the times. That's what it's become. We are all attention deficits. We're all sitting here, and you're kind of listening to me, you know, waiting for the next joke, so to speak. You know, let's get on with the jokes, you know. Come on, you know. What time is it going to finish? You know, we've got a lot of things to do. Because we all have a lot of things to do. Everybody's nervous. Everybody's rushing. Everybody's running. Nobody has time anymore. Nobody has patience. We can't sit. We can't listen. We all have it. You ever sit here? I mean, forget it. Look where we are. I mean, I'm from your neighborhood. Sitting on Avenue L. Have you ever tried driving down Avenue L? It's not the LIE, for heaven's sake. It takes you 20 minutes to get from here to Coney Island Avenue. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon? Right? You know what I'm talking about. And what are we doing? We're sitting there, what's going to be, you know, got to be in 1,000 different places. Maybe if I cut across to K, K is worse than L, I'll go to J. Why don't they make it one way or the other? Oh, it's always the wrong way. I've got to cut around the other side. It drives us crazy. We can't. We have no patience. We've got to keep moving. And then our kids come home, and they want our attention. What? I have no time for them. All right, I have to make time for them. So So you slot them into a little time box, you know, give them a few minutes, you know. But are we really listening to them? We forgot how to do it because we're all so nervous and having to accomplish so much. I mean, look at the telephone. I mean, the telephone is unbelievable. It was not that long ago, believe it or not, that telephones did not work like they do today. And I had this, it happened a couple of years ago. One of my children made a phone call and then came running in like screaming like something happened. I said, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" She said, "Listen, listen." I said, "What?" So she hands me the phone. She says, "Yeah." She says, "It's making a strange noise." I said, "That's called a busy tone." I said, "What? A busy tone." She says, "What do you mean a busy?" "It means they're busy." She says, I'm also busy. It means that they can't come to the phone. No. If they couldn't come to the phone, there'd be a machine, there'd be call forwarding, there'd be a pager. No. It's busy, and that's it. You can't get through. She just didn't look to herself. What do you mean I can't get? I have to talk to her. But what do you mean? I said, what should I do? She said. I said, you have to call back later. Later? I don't want to speak to her later. I want to speak to her now. It's a true story. So that's the way it is. Yeah. Got to be a machine. Got to be called. Got to be something. Must be some way to get through. They didn't forward their messages to somewhere else and then reroute it to the cell phone. There has to be some way to get through. We don't know how to deprive ourselves. We don't know how to wait. We don't know how to listen. Talking to the men here. I'm embarrassed to say how many times we sit during davening and say, what's with that chazan? Come on already. Doesn't he know the words? I mean, we all know the words. Just get on with it. Chazar Hashat, it's taking so long. I'm busy. I gotta move, you know. And we're all guilty of this. You know? How many of us is the biggest simcha in the world and there's no tachman? Whoa, we saved 2 minutes. 3 minutes. We saved 3 minutes. What are you going to do with those 3 minutes, I want to know? Then you stand outside with a coffee for 8 minutes, you know. You save three, I don't, you know. Because we're nervous. We have no attention span. So what do? Your little boy, little Yehuda, comes home after spending 13 hours, after spending 9 hours in yeshiva, okay? But he likes to talk. You ever see kids who like to talk? I have some kids of mine who like to talk. They just don't know how to be quiet. And they come home, they're in the middle of the sentence when they open the door, right? Getting off the bus, they're ready to tell me that. And then the Rebbe, and they go, whoa. Slow down, right? And they come home, and they have 9 hours. They have to tell you every single solitary thing that happened during the day. You know, I got off the bus, and then my lunch, my sandwich fell. And you know, it's only 8:30. He's only up to 8:30, you know. And then I walked into the classroom, and guess who was there? I don't know. It was Yossi. Yossi, okay. What did he do? Yossi hit me. Okay, you know. And you're thinking, you know, I have so many things to do. What are you going to do? The kid takes 13 hours to tell you over a 9-hour day. Right? What are you going to do? Then you have your little daughter, Miriam. She comes home from nursery, from kindergarten, pre-1A, wherever she is. You don't know which one she's in either, by the way, right? Oh, was that last year? Right? And she tells you about, oh, they're having a play. Oh, yeah, one, that's wonderful. You say, that's wonderful. You hope you said the right words. You're not even sure. I think she said a good thing. So that's wonderful. You hope she didn't say, you know. They say, oh, so what's the play about? Well, she plays the part of a snowflake that is falling in a barren forest in scene number 26 of the. But she wants to tell you the play from the beginning. Understand? So you've got to get the whole thing up to scene, and you're going, you know, reel it in. Come on, Miriam, you can do it. Get to scene 26. Come on, you know. And if you're not listening, she'll help you, right? Right? Remember in scene 14? Yeah, sure. You're hoping, praying, she doesn't hit you. You know, right? Because your mind is somewhere else. So what do? I want to tell you, in all seriousness, that what you have to do is you have to listen to them. You're going to have to make time and put it someplace in your mind, in a place of major priority, that you are going to listen to them. Because, very simply, I was going to say, I don't mean to scare you, but I do, that if you don't listen to them, they will make themselves heard. They will find a way for you to pay attention to them. And there are endless ways that kids can find to get your attention. 95% of them are no good. And they will find a way. And then you'll say, what did we do? Where did we go wrong? You know, we didn't do anything wrong. But some kids, not all of them, but some kids really need to be listened to. They really need just to hear you. We used to go to a pediatrician in Borough Park, and I'll tell you his name, Dr. Diamond, you know. And he's a terrific doctor, terrific doctor. He had a way, I have to tell you, he had an incredibly busy practice. But once in a while, when I was found time to take my child to the doctor, and I would go there, first of all, see you waiting, until you finally get in there, and he's running from one room to the next, and you know they do that, right? Oh, you finally get your name called. Right, that means you have an hour left. Right? So you go into the room and you're waiting and waiting. When he finally spoke to you, you felt so excited that you finally get to speak to him, right? He had a way of really listening. He gave you his full attention. He gave you tremendous eye contact. He asked pertinent questions, and he was out, and he was gone. And you looked at your watch, and he spent about 2 minutes with you. Felt like 20. I always said it. Every time I walked out of that office, I said, it felt like 20 minutes. How does he do it? He only gave me 2 minutes. But he did it. He had a way of being completely tuned in. He was zoned in. Eye contact, good questions, a little bit of sympathy, and a smile, and he was out. And that's all it was. It was quality that made you feel like it was quantity. We have to do that with our kids. We have to find a way to do it. One quick tip, because we don't have all night here. Homework. No time for homework. I got to go to the kol. I got to learn. Time for homework. Got to go listen to Yaakov Salman. I can't do homework with my kids. Wherever you're spending, you have to spend a few minutes doing homework. When you're spending those few minutes doing homework, let me tell you something. I know you heard it a million times. You have to hear it again. That time, whether it's 5 minutes or 15 minutes, whatever it is Kodesh Kedushim. You're learning with your son, you're learning with your daughter, Chumash, whatever it is. It's Kodesh Kedushim. That means that you are dead to the world during that time. Mm-hmm. That means that this horrible, wonderful machine has to either be in another room or turned off. Not on vibrate. Not on vibrate. Because when it's on vibrate, then at least we get something, we get the text, we take a little peek. Just a peek. And that peek, you lost them. You lost them with the peek at your cell phone. It's got to be out, either power off. There is a button that says off, by the way. There is one. Most of you guys do not know where that is. There is an off button. It's got to be off or in another room. It cannot be within your possession. When you're doing homework with those kids, never. Now, if you should get a call during that time on your home phone, for those poor souls that do not yet have your cell phone, or those that have your cell number but you have their names in it so you don't answer their calls, so they start calling you at home, and it's so important because it's the bank about the fourth mortgage or whatever it is that we have, no matter what it is, you must turn around and say to whoever answers that phone, I cannot come to the phone because I'm learning with Menachem. You have to say those words. You don't have to use the word Menachem. You can use whatever name is appropriate. I cannot come to the phone. And you have to say, and then immediately after you watch that, immediately after you say, turn around and you take a look at Menachem. And I guarantee you, his face is beaming. And I don't care if he's 5 or if he's 17 years old. When he hears those words, Tati or Mommy cannot come to the phone because I'm busy learning with Menachem, he feels like $1 million. That's the 2 minutes of Dr. Diamond. That's the quality. Because you're telling him, and you're showing him, and you're demonstrating that he is the priority. It may only be for a few minutes, but he has to be the priority somewhere, at some time, during every day. Now, it could be that you're not studying with him. It could be you're sitting with him while he's going to sleep. And if he's 6 years old, or if he's 16 years old, if your kid will let you. And they probably won't. But whatever they're doing, sit with them before they go to sleep. Sit for 2 minutes. Sit for 3 minutes. Totally uninterrupted. Listen to them for 2 minutes. We're up to that. We used to hope for an hour, 2 hours, whatever you can, but make sure it's uninterrupted. So you say, you know what, it's a great idea, but I don't get so many phone calls at home. I don't have the opportunity to put this into practice. So I would say to you, only half kidding, you have to orchestrate these calls. You have to tell your friends, tonight, I want you to call me around 8:30. You know why? Because I'm going to be learning with my son Menachem, so I don't want to take your call. But Solomon said that I should tell you not that I can't take your call. I should call you because you can't take my call? I think you do need Solomon after all. So that's right. Get calls so that you can at least show the kids that you're not taking them. You have to do that. It's not the same as you get a cell call and then you turn it off while he's there. I'm not going to take that. Wow. You already took it. By lifting it up, and you already took it by looking at it. Uninterrupted. Completely undivided. Whether it's learning with them, whether it's sitting with them, going to sleep, whatever you're doing with them. Those few minutes, better 5 minutes uninterrupted than a half an hour of constant interruptions. You know what it's like if you go to a business meeting and the guy is always answering the phone in the middle of the meeting? It's horrible. You walk out feeling like you got nowhere. Think, kal v'chomer, with your own children, how much it means to them. Our kids come home today, especially teenagers. They come home today, especially the girls, right? How many teachers do your teenage girls have? You have girls in high school? How many teachers do they have? 12? 14? 18? What is going on in this world? You know, it's an age of specialization, right? Now, how many of those 16 teachers' names do you know? 4? You're doing pretty good. 4, you're doing pretty good. When she talks about them, if she does talk about them, and she mentions one, do you know what subject they teach? How many of those do you know? 2? And now we're down to 2 out of 16 that we can match the teacher with the subject. Wouldn't it be incredible if we sat down like we're learning something and we memorized the teacher's names? And you could come home, she could come home, and you would say, how is Mrs. Schwartz today? Says, and she looks like, how does she know that? Well, I guess you guessed the name Schwartz is easy. It's amazing, right? You could actually do that. I know you could actually do that because I have done that. I sit down and I write down because I'm old. So I write down their names. And then every once in a while I review them. Now there are some of our boys, teenage boys, who have chavrusas, who have 3 or 4 chavrusas, we hope, or 5 chavrusas even. One on Shabbos, one at night, it's beautiful. Do we know who their chavrusas are? Do we know their names? Write them down. Write them down. Know who they're talking about. Oh, I went with Sussman today. I said, oh yeah, ooh, Sussman, I forgot about him. You start getting nervous, you know. But you should get nervous. You should know them. You should know the chavrusas. You should know the teachers. Know who they are. You'll be able to speak intelligently to them. You've got to be able to connect with them and relate to them. If not, they will find a way to get your attention. They will find a way. They do what happens every day. and you know what I'm talking about. You'd much rather get that they get the attention in the right way than the wrong way. I'm going to run out of time, so I'm just going to go to my second point. Hopefully the first point was wherever it was, should go down well. And the second one is my pet peeve with parenting that I have seen over and over and over and over again, and I preach wherever I go. And I think it's just something that happens time and time again. And not everybody agrees with me. And some people are going to misquote me afterwards and say, I don't know what he meant exactly. But I can't leave a talk about this without mentioning it. And that is what I call over-parenting. And I think that basically, and I wrote it down, basically we are reacting too much, and we are guiding too much, and we are directing too much, and criticizing, see which words you relate to, and fixing and adjusting and helping and improving and punishing and reprimanding and criticizing and warning and instructing and teaching and informing and commanding and ordering and lecturing, like I'm doing, too much. That's what we do. That's what parenting has basically come down to. That's what we do. We're like some giant mashgiach in the house, you know, who's there to put everything in order, tell them what to do, what not to do. Whatever happened with relating to them as people, as human beings, whatever happened with connecting with them, instead of just always directing them and telling them what to do and what not to do, this you should do, this you shouldn't do, whatever happened to just being able to be in some kind of positive relationship with your child? It goes back to what we said before, because we have no time for that. That takes an investment. This is quick. Don't do that. Nah, that was pretty quick. Then you walk out and say, I'm a parent, you know. I just told my kids what to do. Well, guess what? They hear that all day. They get lectured all day. That's not what they need you for. They don't need another lecturer in the home. I think we're all like frustrated teachers or something. Some of us are teachers and we bring our work home with us. And those of us that are not teachers think that we should be, or we could be, or we will be one day. Let's practice at home a little bit on these poor, innocent, vulnerable victims. So we hold court, and we tell them, well, you know. And then you say to yourself, well, look, I know a lot. I've been through a lot. My own past, I saw the mistakes my parents made. I figured it out, right? And there's so much that I know. They would gain so much if they would only listen to what I have to say. I have so much good advice to give them. They'll gain so much if they would only listen. And you're right. You are right. They really would. The only problem is that they won't listen. That's the only problem. They really would gain a lot if they would listen to what you have to say. You have a tremendous amount of advice to give them. You're all very wise, and we all know everything that we're doing. We've been through it all. I've seen it all, and I've done it all. And let me tell you, don't go there. Don't do that. Do this. Great. They would gain so much if they would listen, except for the fact that they won't listen. If you're very, very fortunate, they will ignore you. If you're very lucky, you have to daven very hard for that. Those parents that are over-parenting and imparting all of their sage counsel and all of their wisdom from all of their lives and are giving it over to them, if you're very fortunate, they'll just ignore you and they'll walk away. That would be terrific. That would be terrific. But chances are, they will not do that. The chances are that they will not ignore you. They will react. They'll either tell you don't know what you're talking about, they'll show you that you don't know what you're talking about, they'll rebel, they'll respond. Maybe you'll just get the eye roll. That's pretty tame. The eye roll, that's great. One of my boys, he's older now, I don't want to give away who he is. I have four boys and four girls, Baruch Hashem. So one of my boys, he had this thing with air conditioning. When we spoke before about how kids get whatever they want, you know, I mean, I'm not that old, but I didn't grow up with air conditioning automatically in every room, right? But today, of course, air conditioning is a necessity, and I understand that. You know, it's like a sakana, there's no question. So one of my kids, he was 14 at the time, air conditioning. He had an air conditioner in his room. That meant that it belonged to him, because it was in his room. So whenever he wanted, he turned it on. So I was a little surprised hearing it in January, because, you know, usually January is not that hot here in New York. But I used to walk past his room, and then, he used to hit a hum, and he used to buy him a Galiciano. It used to bother me, you know, the waste of money, it's spoiled, the psychology of it, the whole business there. So I followed rule number one. I spoke to my wife first, because that's the best thing, because they know so much more about this than let's be honest, okay? So I said, what is with him with the air conditioning, you know? So she said, don't say anything. Don't say anything, you know? You tell him to turn off the air conditioning, he'll be at risk. You like that, you know? That's the way it works. I said, okay, I'm not saying anything. I don't say anything, nothing. But every day, you know, the temperature is irrelevant, by the way, outside. When the sun comes out, you know, oh, the sun is out, you know, on the highest, right? And of course, I can't. Now I've become addicted to that. I'm walking past this room, you know, like, you know, at any time of day or night, you know, you know. So one day, of course, what happens? The psychologist falls apart, and I can't hold myself back anymore. You know, we're human, right? So I have to say something to him. So one day I cornered him, little 14-year-old kid, freezing in his room. I cornered him one day and I said to him that I asked him like the dumbest question you could possibly ask. After all this time, you would think I would have thought of something intelligent to say to him after all this time. And I say to him, I look at him and says, tell me, what do you think they did for 3,000 years without air conditioning? I thought it was a pretty good question. No? So he looks at me. He looks at me and he gave me the answer, mamish, that I deserve. He looks at me and he says, ta. He says, ta. It was never as hot as it is now. He became an expert on global warming, you know. Al Gore is living at home with me now. Global warming. I said, I just walked away. I said, she's right. What's with me? She's right again. You know, we're trying too hard. We're trying too hard to run their lives. We're trying too hard to show them what to do, tell them what to do all the time. It's not going to work. You have to know, as I say, you have to know when to oversee and when to overlook. Two great words. They sound like synonyms. Oversee, overlook, they're opposite. Oversee is to look after an operation. Overlook is to stand back. You have to know when to do each. So you say, look, what are you telling us to do? You're taking away our jobs as parents. What are you supposed to do? You have to tell them what to do. I mean, they need hashgacha. They got to know what to do. Isn't that our job? Tell them what to do? The answer is no. That is not your job to tell them what to do. I don't think that's your job at all. It's certainly not your job in 2007 to tell them what to do. Not anymore. Definitely not. So you say, what am I supposed to do? So there's a pasuk in Shir Shirim. It says, Doime doidi litzvi. Kodesh Baruch Hu is like a deer. What does that mean? Like a deer? He neza oimed acher kaslenu. Kodesh Baruch Hu stands behind the wall. Mashkiach min hachaloinos. Meitzitz min hacharakim. He's a mashkiach. Behind the wall. Behind the windows. Thank you. Meitzitz min hacharakim. He peeks through the blind, so to speak. What does this mean? Listen to this medrash. Doine doidi litzvi. How is a Kodesh Baruch Hu like a deer? I've never seen this. But the Medrash says that when a deer sleeps, he sleeps with one eye open and one eye closed. deers are very, very interesting animals. Sometimes they stare at you on the 42, right? You know, right in the middle of the line. Move, move. No, it's looking, you know, strange breeds these deer, right? One eye open, one eye closed. That's how they sleep. So the Medrash says HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the same way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at us with one eye open and one eye closed. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does. He knows when to oversee and when to overlook. He's the Mashgiach. He's the ultimate Mashgiach. Menachaloinus stands behind the window. He knows that I made Acher Kostlenu. He's behind the wall. Meitzitz Menacherakim. You peek through the blinds. You know what that means? It means that he could see us while we cannot see him. He doesn't hover over us. He doesn't smother us and say, "What? Don't talk during laning." Doesn't that? Doesn't correct? Doesn't smack us on the hand every time we do something wrong? Kadosh Baruch Hu understands exactly what to do for us. One eye open, one eye closed. That's our idea of parenting. You have to be able to oversee, but overlook. So how do you oversee? I would tell you that your job is not to oversee by lecturing them. Don't talk to them. Don't tell them what to do. When you talk to them, it should be a time for schmoozing, asking questions, being interested, talking about them, not teaching them about life. They don't care what you know about life. They don't care at all. It doesn't matter to them. And if they do, they're the exception, believe me. So how do I teach them? And how do I oversee? And you took away my job. And the answer is one word. The answer is modeling. You teach them. You teach them all the time, but not verbally. You teach them through your actions, because they are watching. They're watching all the time. And they watch how you live. They watch how you speak to your spouse. And they watch how you answer the door when an ani comes to the door. And they watch how you daven. And they watch how you dress. And they watch what's important to you. And they learn. And they pick up. Is it a guarantee? No. No guarantees in this business. But it is your best shot at communicating your values, your ideas, all of the wisdom that you want to impart to them, that you think you'll be able to give over to them with your words, which will guarantee to backfire. That is a guarantee. All of that can be communicated through your actions. That's what it's all about. Take care of yourself. Live a good life. Take care of yourself. Guaranteed, they're watching. They will pick it up. I know my time is up. I'm going to end with a verse from Naipes de Rav that I heard. Just very beautiful. I never forgot it. I heard it many years ago. It says, every day in Kriya Shema we say, "Veshinan tom levonecha v'dibar ta bum." We should teach our children. That's what we're talking about. Let's teach our children. When should we teach our children? When should we do it? All the time. Should always teach your children when you're walking in the street, when you get up, when you go to sleep. You should always teach them. You have to constantly be teaching your children. So the Naipes de Rav said, very beautiful pshat. He said, the pasuk isn't only teaching you when to teach your children, but how to teach your children. V'shinan tam levanecha. You have to teach them. How do you do it? B'shivtecha b'veisecha. How you sit in the house. Uvelechtecha b'derech. And how you walk on the street. Uveshachtecha uvkumecha. And how you go to sleep. And how you wake up in the morning. And when. That's how you teach them. It's not only when you teach them. That's how you do it. B'shivtecha b'veisecha. How you live in your house. That's how you teach them. That's Vishinantam Livonecha. That's how you teach your kids. You teach through example. So my message basically to you is, you have a big job to do, and you have a lot of things that you want to give over to them, and they need it very, very badly from you. But it should never come out of your mouth. Take care of yourself. Make sure you know what you're doing. Live the life the way you're supposed to live it. And your chances are pretty good. should all be zecha. This guy's banu of nevanim oiskim b'teira b'mitzvah. Thank you for coming.